We're holding on Paytas Elmwood Bays, about 10 lines from the bottom, 12 lines from the bottom. The line begins at Revius. We're in the middle of talking about the denim of weights and measures that the Torah warns in several places that you have to have honest weights and measures. So here's another din. Omer of Yehuda Omer Rab. A person is not allowed to keep around in his house an underweight or overweight measuring thing. So a midah particularly would be, for example, a container that's supposed to hold a certain amount. So if it's supposed to hold, let's say, a gallon, then and it holds more or less than that, then he's not supposed to keep it. Then he can't keep it around his house. Even if he's not using it for measuring at all, even if he's just using it as a bucket for urine, because there's always the possibility that he might use it at some point. He might wash it out and use it for and use it for measuring. So therefore, the only thing you can do in short is break it. Now, the Papa says that applies only in a place where the weights are not stamped. Now, we talked about yesterday that where they have a gardamin, where they have market inspectors who go around and check that people's weights are honest, then sometimes what they would do is they would stamp them with their official seal. And in such places, what you might have is that nobody's going to use a weight or a measuring thing or whatever unless it has the official stamp on it. So Ava ba'asra de chasimi, but in places where they do put the stamp, ilay chazi chasima, then if the customer doesn't see the stamp on the measuring utensil, lo shokel, then he's not going to buy in the first place. So then there's not necessarily a problem of having the underweight weight around and using it for something else, because if you try to use it, then the customer is going to say, wait, where's the stamp on it? And the Gemara continues, if Astra Delechasimi, even in places where they don't stamp them, Nami Loyamoran, we also don't say that there's a problem keeping it around, Elo Dele Mahandisi, only if they're not Mahandisi, which we'll explain in a second what that is. Avo Mahandisi, less one above, but if they're Mahandisi, then there's no problem. The Rashbam explains that Mahandisi comes from a word in Aramaic that means like to jump around, like to circulate around. So in other words, if there are officials in charge who are always going around and checking to make sure that the weights and measures are honest, then there's not a problem keeping an underweight or overweight one around, because then the officials will find out soon enough and the guy will get in trouble. The Oruch gives a different explanation. Now you have in Arabic and from it in Hebrew already in the times of the Rishonim and later on in modern Hebrew as well, they have the same shodash, hey nun dalad samach, that comes to mean measuring or in modern Hebrew, handasah is geometry, for example. So the Oruch explains along those lines that mahandasi means where they have, that the measures are very exactly, that the weights and measures are very exactly measured. In other words, that if it's under weight or overweight, I guess he doesn't explain exactly, but the implication seems to be if it's in such a way that people are going to know very clearly by a glance whether this thing is underweight or overweight, then the Gemara is saying that it wouldn't be a problem even if you don't use stamps. However, the Gemara says v'loihi, but it's not so. Zimnin mikri bein hashmoshes, it could happen bein hashmoshes that a person is in a hurry to buy something, mikri the shokil, and then he may go and buy without paying attention. So therefore, you still have a problem that it could. He may not pay attention that it's not stamped or that it's not or whatever or even when you have the officials go around, then they're not going around bein hashmoshes, and therefore there's the concern that the seller might try to get away with it. So according to the Rashbam, the Veloihi goes on both things, that you can't keep the underweight or overweight measure around at all, even in places where they have them stamped, and even in places where the officials circulate around, because bein hashmoshes, it may happen that a person is in a hurry and goes and buys and doesn't pay attention. On the other hand, according to the Rambam, only the second statement is the one that we reject. So the first one about the stamps, we still continue to say is valid, and therefore, yes, if it's a place where when the weights and measures have to be stamped, and if not, then nobody will accept them, then that's valid, and then you can keep the underweight one around, because then even Bein HaShemashas, nobody is going to go and buy with a measure that's not stamped by the officials. Okay, the Gemara continues. Tani Nami Hochi. In fact, we learn like that in a Braisa, like what Rabbi Yehuda had said in the name of Rav. Lo Yasha Adam Midchaseira Yoseir B'Seich Beisei. A person is not allowed to keep an under or oversized weight in his house, measure in his house. Ba'afilihi Ovit Shomei Meraglaim. Even if he's using it as a bucket for urine. Aval Oise. However, continues the Braisa, a person is allowed to make measuring utensils of different sizes. Now, the point that we're going to establish in the next piece of Gemara is you're going to have different sizes of measuring utensils. You have to be careful not to make them too close together, because one can easily be confused with the other. So you have to have them far apart enough in size that people will be able to notice the difference. So the Braisa continues. Aval oisahu saw. So you are allowed to have a measure that holds a saw. Tarkov. You're allowed to have a tarkov, which is a container that holds a half a saw, because the difference between a saw and a half a saw will be very noticeable. And therefore, if you try to pass off a half a saw as a saw, the customer is going to notice. Vachatsi tarkov. You're also allowed to make a half a tarkov. A tarkov. Tarkov comes from the words trei v'kav. So trei means two, v'kav means another kav. There are six kavim to the saw, so a tarkov is three kavim, so half a saw. So you're allowed to make that. V'chatzi tarkov, you're allowed to also have a container that holds a half a tarkov, which would be one and a half kavim. The kav, you're also allowed to make a kav measure. Now, on the face of it, a kav and a kav and one and a half kavim are fairly close together, but they're far enough. They're far enough apart. There's enough of a difference between them, as the Rashbam explains, based on the next piece of Gemara, that we're not worried that customers are going to confuse them. So therefore, you're allowed to have both the one and a half kav and a kav, but chatzi kav, you can have then a half a kav, the roiva, and you'll have a quarter kav. The toymen, and next you're allowed to have the next lower measure that you're allowed to have is a toymen. Now the Rashbam discusses over here what is a toymen exactly. You could understand that a toymen means 1/8 of a lug. So you have a roiva, and Rashbam also adds you could have a chatsi roiva. So a roiva would be a quarter of a kav, which is equal to a lug. A half a roiva would be half of that, so half a lug. And then on the face of it, a toymen would be 1/8 of a lug. A lug being approximately, according to Avraham Chaim Noah, it's about 12 ounces, so therefore 1/8 of a lug would be 1.5 ounces. But the Rashbam points out that doesn't really fit with that doesn't really fit with the next piece of Gemara. So rather, he explains that the toymen means 1/8 of a kav, which will be a half a lug. So therefore, so you're doing a roiva, which is a lug, and then the toymen is half that, which is going to be half a lug, 1/8 of a kav. So not 1/8 of a lug, but rather 1/8 of a kav. There are four lug into a kav. That's how the Rashbam prefers to understand it. And in that case, we don't have chatsi roiva, because chatsi roiva and toymen would be exactly the same thing. Next, v'chatzi toymen, then you can have a half a toymen, which according to that way of looking at it would be a quarter of a lug. There are six beitzim in a lug. The way the units fit together in halacha is as follows. You have a beitza, which in modern measures is about 2 ounces according to Rav Avraham Chaim Noah. Six of those make a lug. Four lugim make a kav, and six kavim make a sa. So now we're saying, so again, working down then, you had a saw, a half a saw, which is going to be, so let's put it in modern measures, according to Rav Chaim Noah. The, uh, The beitza, again, is about 2 ounces, so a lug is going to be 12 ounces. A kav would be about 48 ounces, so around 3 pounds. And a sa would be 6 times that, would be 18 pounds. So you're allowed to have, the braisa is saying, you can have a measure that contains a sa, which is 18 pounds, a tarkav, which is 9 pounds, a half a tarkav, which is going to be 4.5 pounds, a kav, which is 3 pounds, a half a kav, which is 1.5 pounds, the roiva, a quarter calf, which is going to be about 3/4, which is going to be about 3/4 of a pound, about 12 ounces. That would be equal to a lug. The toymen, and again, the Rashbam discusses over here what a toymen is and concludes that a toymen would be 1/8 of a calf. So we're talking about 6 ounces. The chatsi toymen, half of that, which would be approximately 3 ounces. The chatsi toymen actually would be a beitz and a half, so about 3 ounces. The uchla, and you're also allowed to have an uchla. The kamahi uchla, now what is the definition of an uchla? Echad mechamisha b'reviya, is 1/5 of the quarter. That's the quarter, meaning quarter kav, a lug. So the 1/5 of that then will be 1.2 beitzim. A beitza being 2 ounces, so you're talking about 2.4 ounces. Again, all of this according to Rabbi Avraham Chaimna, according to the Chazon Ish, and according to the various other poskim, it's going to be different amounts in modern units. But whatever. The point is that you're allowed to do that. So it comes out then that Ashbam points out the difference between the toymen and the uchla is not really that big, because the toymen is going to be is going to be a half a lug, and the uchla is going to be the half toymen, which is going to be 1/4 of a lug, is not really all that different than the uchla, which is 1/5 of a lug. So you have a difference. So you have only a small difference between them. And the Gemara is going to ask soon, aren't we concerned that people are going to confuse them? You're going to have somebody wants to buy a chatsi toymen, and you're going to give him an uchla, which is a smaller amount, and you're going to try to get away with it because he may not notice the difference between those small weights. So the Gemara is going to explain soon why that's not a problem. Next, the Braisa continues over midas halach, as far as measuring containers for solids, for things like grain or flour or whatever. Over midas halach loisa, as far as liquid measures, really actually all the measurements that we mentioned, a saw, a calf, and so forth, strictly speaking, I was translating them into American units. Properly speaking, really, all of these are measures of volume rather than of weight. When we talk about, for example, that a beitza is 2 ounces, what we really mean is the volume of 2 ounces of water, approximately, and the same thing with all the other ones. Anyway, over midas halach loisa, when it comes to liquid measures, you can have the following measures. Hin, you can have a hin, which is 12 lug, the chatsi hin, and a half a hin, which is going to be, and the Rashbam points out, a hin is going to be equal to a tarkav, because there are 12 lug, there are 12 lug to the hin, and we said before, there are 24 kavim to the sa, and you're allowed to have a tarkav, which is a half a sa, so the equivalent liquid measure is called a hin. That's the largest liquid measure that's mentioned. It's not actually the largest. It's one of the larger liquid measures that's mentioned in Tanakh. It actually mentions a larger one called a bas. But anyway. So you have a hin, which is 12 lug, the chatsi hin, and a half a hin, which then will be equivalent to the half a tarkov that we had before. Ushlishis a hin, urevias a hin. Then you can have 1/3 of a hin and 1/4 of a hin. And the Gemara is going to ask soon that on the face of it, 1/3 and 1/4 are fairly close together. And isn't there a problem that there might be cheating of the customer? So we'll talk about that soon. The lug, v'chatsi lug, urevias. Then you're allowed to have a lug measurement, and a half a lug, and 1/4 of a lug. Ushminis, and 1/8 of a lug. The echad mishmoid mishminis, and then you're allowed to have 1/64 of a lug. The Zehu Kurtov, and that last one, 1/64th, is what we call a Kurtov. When we have, for example, the Mishnayos, Yesh Malanos HaMikveh, the Mishnayos that we learn for the 11 months and for a Yahrzeit, where we have Dinim over there, for example, that if the Mishnah, that if the water at a Mikveh is lacking a Kurtov, and it's filled up with Mayim Shovim or whatever, then it doesn't count. So a Kurtov, now we know, is 1/64th of a log. So again, a log following Rav Avraham Chaim Noah, that a log is about 12 ounces, then 1/64th of that would be under a quarter of an ounce. It would be about a little less than 1/5 of an ounce. So that's the smallest measure that you would have. The Rashbam points out the reason why with liquid measures you're going down so far, as opposed to with solid measures, you only went down only as far as an uchla, which we said was 1/5 of a log. The difference is because dry things you don't usually measure in such small kalim. Usually just once you get to such small amounts, then you just estimate it. Or if it's something really precious, then you weigh it. To measure it by putting it into a container, you're more likely to do in small quantities when it's liquids. The Rashbam also has a girsa that the kurtov that we're saying over here is not echad mishmona b'shminis, 1/8 of an eighth, meaning 1/64th of a log. The Rashbam's girsa is chatzi shminis, that it would be 1/16th of a log, which therefore would be a little less than an ounce. Okay. So the Gemara asks, we went through the list of measures for solids and for liquids. Marsha points out further. Marsha wonders why can't you have, for example, in the liquid measures, why can't you have something that would be 1/6 of a hin, which would be 2 logim, and the equivalent in dry measures would be a half a kav. He leaves it tzorachin. The Gemara asks, "V'la evin nami kabayim." Why don't we say that he should also be, when it comes to the solid measures, he should be entitled to make a measure of 2 kavim. Given that, especially that we see that you have a shlishis ahin, 1/3 of a hin, the equivalent in dry measures in volume is going to be 1/3 of a saw. So why don't we allow him to also have a container that's 1/3 of a saw, which would be equal to 2 kavim. There's discussion about what the Rashbam means by understanding the question of the Gemara that way. Why don't we say very simple? You should be able to have a 2 kav measure in case you want to measure out 2 kavim. Anyway, the answer is, the Gemara says, Mishum the answer is, Osi l'chlufi b'tarkam. The problem is that a third of a saw, 2 kavim, is very close in size to a half a saw, which is 3 kavim, and a person might get mixed up between them. So what's going to happen? A person is going to come and ask, and then want to buy at the store, tarkam, 3 kavim, and instead you're going to take the container that holds 2 kavim and measure out for him, and he's not going to notice the difference. And then he's going to end up getting cheated. So the Gemara says, okay, well then, Alma to Inchi Tilta. So you're telling me that people might mistake the size of the measure by up to 1/3, because you're saying that the difference between a hat and the difference between 2 and 3 kavim is not enough of a large difference that people might not notice the difference and somebody might overlook it. Well, the question is, then by that logic, you shouldn't be able to make a 1 kav measure to oscillate chlufi b'chatzi tarkov, because then that can be confused with the half a tarkov, which is 1.5 kavim. So obviously that can't be, because the fact is, the Braisa had said that you're allowed to have both a kav and a half measure and a kav measure, and we're not concerned that you're going to, that people are going to confuse one for the other and that the customer may end up getting cheated. So the Gemara says, fine, you're right. El kabayim hayne time and delay ovid. Fine. The reason why you can't make a 2 kav measure, the osile chlufi b'chatzi tarkov, because it might be confused with a half a tarkov, which is 1.5 kav. So now the difference between 1.5 and 2 is only a quarter. So a quarter, a 25% difference, people might not notice. Okay, so the Gemara says, Alma tori inish riva. Okay, so you're telling me that a person might make a mistake by up to 25%. and not notice the difference between them. By that logic, you shouldn't be able to make the half a toymen and the uchla, because we said before the half a toymen is the toymen we said is 1/8 of a kav. Which is going to be then, which is going to be then, we said 1.5. So we said that toymen is going to be, 1/8 of a, 1/8 of a kav, 3 kibetza. A half a toymen we said is going to be 1.5. And then we said that you can also have an uchla, which is 1.2. So the difference between 1.2 and 1.5 is also, the difference is only, the difference is only 1/5. The difference is only 20%. And people are going to get confused. And the answer is, I'm going to pop a midis katanis b'ki b'hu inchi. Because when it comes to small measures like that, the toymen, the half toymen and the uchla, people are going to notice the difference because they're small. They're small in the first place, so therefore people are going to, people are going to more easily be able to evaluate by sight how much it holds. So therefore it is less likely that, that a person is going to be able to cheat somebody else with that. On the other hand, when you get to larger kalim, like a, like 1.5 kav versus 2 kav, people are not going to be able to eyeball and see how much they hold, and therefore you may, the person may take out a kav and a half measure and pretend like it's two, and the other person won't realize. Okay, the Gemara says, fine. What about now when it comes to the liquid measures? Shlisha sehin revias sehin le'levid. We said before that you can have a third of a hin and a quarter of a hin, which is respectively a third of a hin is 4 logim, a quarter of a hin is 3 logim. So why should he be able to allowed to have both of those? Again, the difference between them is 25%, and we said when it comes to larger measures, you can't have them with it. You can't have them 25% different from one another because people may not notice the difference. The answer is kiven to have over mikdash like gozru b'hu rabbanon. The answer is because they used such kalim in the bis mikdash. So in other words, in short, since they existed in the Bais HaMikdash, so the Chachamim are not going to impose on the Tzibur to not have such measurements by them in the house. And they needed them in the Bais HaMikdash because you have the Nesachim that they needed for the Korbanos. So a bull has it for its Nesachim, for its wine and oil that goes with it when you bring a bull as an oil or a Shlomim. You need to bring a half a hin. You need to bring a half a hin, which is 6 logim of wine together with it. And for a ram, a third of a hin, which is 4 logim. And for a sheep, for a baby sheep, a quarter of a hin, which is 3 logim. So in the Bais HaMikdash, therefore, they needed different size measuring containers for those. So once they have them in the Bais HaMikdash, then the Chachamim are not going to impose on the Tzibur to not have them either. So people will have to just pay attention when it comes to when they're buying a third or a quarter of a hin to notice which keli the storekeeper is using. So the Gemara asks the Bais HaMikdash Nami Ligzer, nu, let them make the Gzeira in the Bais HaMikdash that you can't have such kalim as well. Now, Tosfos says, what do you mean? I mean, the fact is they need to measure out the amounts for the Nesachim. The point of the Gemara's question is, fine, what they could do is they could measure it out by the lug. Because after all, the measurement is there are 12 lugim to the hin. So we could say, for example, they'll have a lug measure, and for a bull, they'll measure out 6 of those, and for a ram, 4, and for a sheep, 3. Why instead do we allow them in the Bais HaMikdash to have kalim to begin with, to pour in a third or a quarter or a half of a hin and measure that way? Why weren't we concerned that they might mix up over there, and then in turn they could make the same Gzeira for the Tzibur? And the answer is Koyanim Zirzimheim. The answer is the Koyanim are very eager and very careful, and they're not going to get things mixed up. So once we allow it for them, then we have to allow it for the rest of the Tzibur as well, and we're not going to prevent them from having such Kalim. The Rambam phrases it a little differently, that since they had such kalim in the Bais HaMikdash from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, then the Chachamim weren't going to later on impose and say that you can't have such kalim outside the Bais HaMikdash. There is, in fact, an idea that Taz mentions in a particular place, that when you have something that the Torah explicitly permits, then the Chachamim don't have the power to forbid it. This might be an example of that, since the Torah is implying that you should have kalim of that size, then therefore, so that might not be that it says explicitly, but it might be close enough, then therefore the Chachamim are not going to ask for it for the future. With that said, by the way, we talked about, we learned the other day in the Gemara, Shnosis Hoyobahin, that there was a different opinion in the Mishnah in Menachos that said that instead of having separate kalim for a third and a quarter of a hin, instead they had one big keli that held a hin, and they had markings in it to show, like in measuring cups, to show up till here is a half, up till here is a quarter, and so forth. And there's an opinion in the Mishnah in Menachos that that's how they had it in the Bis Mikdash too, instead of having separate kalim for the purpose. Okay. More dinim about weights and measures. Amar Shmuel, ein masifin al amidus yosem mishtus. If people want to enlarge a measure, so let's say for example that you have, let's take for example a measure like a saw. What if they get together and they decide, you know what, we decided that we should enlarge what's considered a saw. Until now, a saw was, let's say, like we were saying before, 18 pounds. We get together and we decide that, you know what, we want to redefine the saw as 20 pounds. So they're not allowed to make that difference. Yosim is shtus more than 1/6, which is to say 1/6 of the new measure, which is going to be one-fifth of the old measure. So, for example, you could have that Rashbam describes, so you could have, let's say, they had a measure that until now fit 5 eggs in it, and now they're going to make one of the same name that's going to hold 6 eggs, that they're allowed to do, but not more than that. And also and similarly, if they want to make the coins larger, same thing. They want to have that a coin that was nominally worth a certain amount is going to be revalued at a different amount. They also can add more than 20% to it, more than 1/6 to it. Again, 1/6 of the new total, which is 1/5 of the old one. And a third din that also involves a shtus, by mistake, when a person is making profit on what he's selling. A person is buying, so the Rashbam describes, for example, that a person is buying wine or merchandise, or wine or produce or whatever from a wholesaler and then selling at retail, so he shouldn't make a profit of more than shtus, of more than 1/6. There's a note in Rashbam that says that's what we're talking about when the prices are still stable. If we're talking about that he bought them at the harvest time and now it's worth more, now in general the prices have gone up, then he can make as much profit as he wants because then he can follow the current market price. The point is, in other words, that the chachamim are making a takana. Outside of that, he's entitled to make a profit, but not more than 1/6. Similarly, other Rishonim point out, using other words, the same kind of thing, that where you have, we talked about yesterday, a gaudamin that based in enforces price controls, like we talked about yesterday. We have Shmuel saying that you don't, and we have Kauna having a braisa that says that you do. So here we'd be talking about where you have controls like that, then you're limited in how much of a profit you can make compared to everybody else. But where you don't have, if you have, for example, that everybody is jacking up their prices, you're not obligated, the Yad Ramah points out, you're not obligated to go and sell cheaper than everybody else in order to stay close to the original price and suffer a loss compared to them, then you're allowed to follow the current market price and price your things accordingly. So similar to what Rashbam says. So we have three dinim that Shmuel is saying, all of which the maximum change is 1/6, as far as increasing the size of the weights and measures, as far as increasing the size of the currency, and as far as making a profit. So let's go through each of those. So first we're saying, when we say that you're not allowed to increase the measures more than 1/6, so my timer, why is that? Ilema Mashumach Kori Tara, is it because you're concerned that that's going to cause prices to go up? That people are going to say, now, well, we have a bigger measure, therefore we have to charge more for it. And if they're going to end up jacking up the prices more than the percentage that they increased it, Well, then, shtusnami. By that logic, shtusnami lawyer, then they shouldn't be allowed to add up to shtus either. Then the same thing would be if they raise the size of the measure by any amount. If they raise it by 10%, then they're going to be charging 10% more, and that would be, and they might instead say, well, you know what, instead of 10% more, I'm going to try to get away with charging 15% more. So no matter what, then you're going to have that problem. Ela mishum oina. So you're going to say that the reason is because of oina. Whereas we learned back in Rav Matzia, the threshold for oina is 1/6. And the point is, you want to say that the Chachamim wanted to make sure that you don't wind up with a case where there's going to be bitul mekach, where, like this we learned, when the overcharge or underpayment is exactly 1/6, then you're entitled to a refund of the extra amount, but not to void the sale completely. But then we're saying that when it comes to if it's more than 1/6, then you're entitled to bitul mekach. You're entitled to void the sale altogether. So therefore, maybe the Chachamim did not want to have it that you're going to end up in that kind of situation where people are going to demand to void the sale. So you're going to say that that's why. So in other words, the point is that Rashbam explains that like this, if at this point now, the way you have it now, there's not going to be, so if you only add 1/6, you could have enough, but it's not going to reach the threshold of bitul mekach, whereas if we made the measure larger than that, then conceivably you might have. So for example, let's say that Ashbam describes, let's say for example, you have donkey drivers, which were the equivalent in those days of truck drivers who are bringing large amounts of grain. So let's say for example, they usually sell 5 kavim for 5 dinarim, let's say that Ashbam says. So now all of a sudden the measure has been made larger. Now it's going to be 6 kavim to the new measure. So they don't know. They're continuing to use their old prices. So it comes out that the sellers have now been cheated by a shtus, by a 6. So instead, they sold 6 kavim for the price of 5. So now what you do is fine, then that doesn't trigger bitul mekach. It just means once the donkey drivers find out that things have changed, then they're going to go and demand the extra amount and they'll be paid, but the sale will still stay valid. As opposed to, let's say, for example, if they went from 5 to 6.5, then you're going to have bitul mekach, and we want to avoid that. So we can say that's why we make the threshold of change to be 1/6. So the problem with that is Ha'amar Rava, but didn't Rava say Kol Davar Shabamidav Shabamishkav Shabaminyan? Any time that you have something that's sold by number, by measurement, or by weight, or by number, Afilu Pachas Mikdei Ayna, then even if the difference is less than the threshold of Ayna, Koizer, then you can go back and void the sale. In other words, when we talk about Ayna, means, for example, that you have, let's say, you're buying items in bulk. It's supposed to be that the price for this consignment of merchandise is $100, and instead you paid $120. So that would be Ayna, and then therefore you're entitled to the extra $20 back. But if it was less than that, if instead you had paid 119, then as we learned from Bava Metzia, that would be Mechila, because it's less than a difference of 1/6, and we assume that you were Mechil. But Rav is saying that's only applying when it's something like that. But when you have, for example, that you're saying that I want to buy X number of pounds of merchandise or X number of items of this, like when you buy a dozen eggs or whatever, let's say, for example, you go to the store and you buy a dozen eggs and you come home and you find that they gave you only 11 eggs, then Rava is saying, even though it's less than Kendei Ayna, then you can go back and void the sale, because it's one thing when you have a consignment of merchandise, then let's say, fine, your people might value it at different amounts, and since the difference is less than 1/6, then we can say he was merchel. But here you're saying it's an actual toast. He expected to get X number of things, and instead he got a smaller number than the whole sale, then that's mekach toast, and the whole thing can be voided. So that being the case then, so what are we talking about over here if we make the measures larger than as long as you're within the threshold of kono maksa no, then you're fine? No, because the person is going to be saying, I expected to be receiving 6 kavim, and instead you gave me only 5, or vice versa, and then you're going to have the whole sale is going to be voided. So that doesn't work then to say that's the reason for the threshold that the Chachamim are allowing in terms of changing the sizes of the weights and measures. There is, by the way, some discussion of Rishonim. What do we mean by that? When we say that Afilu Pachas Mekadei No Choser, doesn't mean that unilaterally the buyer can say, no, I don't even care if you give me the extra item. I want to just void the whole sale and have done with it. Or maybe can the seller say, you know what? Fine, you're right. I gave you only 11 eggs when I was supposed to give you the 12th. Fine, I'll give you the 12th egg, and then we'll be even. Or does the buyer have the right unilaterally to say, I don't care. I don't even want the extra egg. I just want to avoid the sale altogether, and then I'll go buy something else. So the Ran understands the Rambam to say, and the Ramban and other Rishonim learn that way that no, in a case like that, then yeah, you can adjust it easily. So therefore, there's no problem. On the other hand, the Rashba learns that it is an absolute statement, but choser, meaning in other words, he has to actually, in other words, the point of the Nafka Minna would be, let's say, for example, now you could have, for example, where you're buying a dozen eggs, but, and instead the guy gave you only 11, versus you could have a case where you're buying a house, which is supposed to be 100 square feet, and instead the guy sold you a house, which is only 90 square feet. So you can't just add more space. So the idea would be the Ran understands the Ramban this way, and the Ramban and other Rishonim learn that the difference would be in the case of the eggs, then we say the sale is not automatically invalidated. You just have to give them the extra egg, whereas in the case of the house, it would be. And the Rashba learns differently, and the Rashba says that it means that you always have to compensate. So it has to be then. In other words, the choser would mean in the case of the eggs, you have to give him the extra egg. And in the case of the house, you'd have to refund him the amount of money. And then, of course, you could have an example where you are able to add more space. Then there's different Rishonim that talk about what exactly Rava means when he says choser over here. It doesn't necessarily mean, in other words, that if you go and buy, let's say, a box of nails or screws or something, and you find that it has one less in it, that the whole sale should automatically be void, not necessarily because the hardware store owner can easily throw in the extra thing. Anyway, the point, going back to the Gemara, is that why are we saying then that the difference that you're allowed to make the measures larger is up to 1/6 in order to avoid issues with a na and bitul mekach? The fact is, you can have bitul mekach even when the difference is smaller than those thresholds, where it's a matter of that he expected to be buying a particular number or weight or measure of such and such a thing. The Gemara answer is now, Ella Deloy Lahevi Pseda Lakagra. No, the reason why Shmuel is saying that you can't increase the measures by more than 1/6 is in order that the seller shouldn't lose out. He might, let's say, come from a different city, and he's entitled, we said, Shmuel's third din had said that he's entitled to make a profit of up to 20%. Now, he's going to be coming from another city, so he doesn't know. He's going to continue selling at his old prices. If now you have, the measures have been made much larger, then there goes his whole profit. It's going to eat up his whole profit. So now, not only his profit, it's going to eat into his keren, into his capital. So instead, we want to have the most is, the worst that should be is that he loses all of his profit and he just sells it for exactly as much as he bought it. Because again, he'll bought it and then plan to sell it at the smaller measures. And now over here locally, they're using the larger measures, and therefore he might lose his profit, but at least we don't want to eat into his keren. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? So you're telling me that we only care about that he shouldn't lose from his capital, from the amount that he paid originally, but we don't care if he makes a profit? What do you mean? If a person just buys and sells at the same price, is he called a merchant? The whole point of buying and selling is to make a profit. So why don't we say then the threshold should be less than a shtus? That way, at least he'll be able to make a little profit. He might not make his full 20% profit that he expected, but he'll be able to make 1 or 2% profit or something. How can we say that we can allow the increase in measures to completely offset the amount of profit that he expected to make? El Amar of Chista. So rather, Rav Chista says what Shmuel is saying about increasing the measures by 1/6 is not based on a logical analysis that we were saying until now, but rather Shmuel found a pasuk that implies that you can increase them by up to 1/6, but no more than that. Namely, the Navi Yechezkel says, when he's describing how things are going to be lost lava in the time of the third Beis Hamikdash, so he describes the shekel estrim geira, the shekel akodesh consists of 20 geira, just like you have in the Torah. And he continues, estrim shkolim, now you're going to have coins or weights of 20 shkolim, chamisha v'estrim shkolim, of 25 shkolim, asara v'chamisha shekel, and of 15 shekel, hamone yilachem, and all of that is going to add up to, all of that is going to add up to a mone. A mone is generally 100 dinar, which is usually going to be 25, which is usually going to be 25 shkolim. So here, in other words, what Yechezkel is telling us is we're going to take these three numbers and add them together, 20 plus 25 plus 15, and together those are going to equal a mone. 20 and 25 and 15 equals 60. So instead of we expect there to be 25 shekel on a mone, instead we're saying 60. So let's calculate how that is. So the question is, mona, mosen, rabon, havu. What are you talking about? This is a mona. A mona is supposed to be 100 dinar, which is 25 sela. And here you have, it's 240 because you have 60 sloim, and each one consists of 4 dinar. Ella, shmamina tlas. So therefore, there are three things that you can derive from this pasuk. Shmamina mona shal kodesh kopal hoya. Number one, you see that the mona of hektish was double the size of the one of cholin, and we find similarly in other cases. We find in a Gemara in Bechoris, for example, where a Roman official argues to Rav Yechim and Zakkai that the calculations at the beginning of Parshas Pekudei are not exact, that it seems like half the money is missing, and Rav Yechim explains to him that the mona of Kodesh is double the size of the regular one, and therefore that all the calculations there work out. In other words, usually the Torah there at the beginning of Parshas Pekudei puts it in terms of kikrim and shkolim. So a kikr usually consists of 1,500 shekel, and here instead it consists of 3,000 shekel, so it's double the size. So we see that the mona of kodesh is double the size, so that brings us up from 25 to 50. Number two, we see that you can increase the measures, but by not more than 1/6, because they went from 50 to 60. And the third thing is, you see that the definition of shtus, of 1/6, for this purpose and for many other areas in halacha, is calculated from the outside. In other words, when you're going from 50 to 60, we would call it that you've increased it by 20%. But in Torah terminology, we're calling it that we increased it by 1/6, because the extra 10 that we increased is 1/6 of the new size, 10 out of 60. So that's the maximum amount. So we see, in other words, the Rimi Gash points out, for example, if it weren't for that, why would they make it 240, which is not a very convenient number to work with on the face of it? They would have made it 250 or something. So therefore, that shows they couldn't go from 200 to 250. In other words, before, Yechezkel is describing like a monetary reform over here, that before that you would have, that a mona would consist of 50 sloim, a regular mona would consist of 25, a mona shal kodesh would consist of 50, and now Yechezkel is saying we're going from 50 to 60, and since each one contains 4 dinarim, then we're going from 200 to 240. The point is, in other words, why didn't they go to 250, let's say, which would be more convenient as far as dividing it into 1,000, as far as dividing 1,000 by it, let's say. That goes to show that you can't go more than 20%, which is, in Gemara terminology, is called shtus, which means 1/6, because it means it's 1/6 of the total. So we see from that that you're allowed to revalue the coinage appropriately, and therefore, so we see, so the Rashbam points out, they go together. If you're going to increase the coinage, then you're also going to increase the measures, because you want that the prices should still stay, and you still want that the prices should be should keep pace with the coinage. If you knew before, for example, that a saw is going to be selling for X number of dinarim, you still want to maintain that ratio. So if you're going to increase the size of the coinage, then you're also going to increase the size of the measures to keep pace with it. But that's the maximum difference that you can do. Tosfos actually has a bit of discussion about it. First of all, that usually we say that here Yechezkel saying that the shekel consists of 20 gera, but Tosfos asks, gera is identical with a ma, which we find in many other places in the Gemara, that a ma is 1/6 of a dinar. So that means there are 24 ma to the seller, where here Yechezkel is talking about 20. So Tosfos talks about that there were different valuations over here in the time of the Chachamim. That it's true, the Sela used to be, even in Yechezkel's times, the Sela was still 20 gera, and then later on the Chachamim increased it again by 20%, like we're saying over here, and they made it, they changed it from 20 to 24 gera, from 20 to 24 ma, and then Tosfos goes on to say that actually, what it is Yechezkel himself is talking about a larger seller, and he's saying, in other words, that he's saying that what used to be the shekel, which used to be 20 gera, is now going to be 24, and then the numbers that he's saying, 20 shkolim, the 25 shkolim, etc., that means, in other words, he's saying that what used to be a certain number of shkolim is now going to be a different number. And Tosfos goes on to explain that's why he mentions these particular. Why does he just say 60 shkolim? Why does he say 25? Why does he say 20, 25, 15? The point is, in other words, that he's saying that these are, so Mephoshim on the Pasuk explained that he means that they're going to have these sizes of measures. They're going to have 20, which is a third. They're going to have 25, which is whatever, the different 25, which is half of the old one, 15, which is a quarter of the new one. But Tosfos explains that another way of understanding it is that Yechezkel is saying that what used to be 15 is now going to, what used to be 25 is now going to be 20 and so forth. Tosfos also points out an interesting point over here, that Yechezkel's figures over here, 20, 25, and 15, also correspond to the three psukim of Birkas Kohanim, because the first pasuk contains 15 letters, the second pasuk 20, and the third pasuk 25. Which adds up to 60, again, because you have 60 letters in Birkas Kohanim. So that's the idea. In other words, the Jewish people are blessed from Hashem by giving Matzah Shekel. So therefore Yechezkel hints at Birkas Kohanim when he's describing the size of the Shekel in the future, where we're going to start giving Matzah Shekel again. Okay. So that explains Shmuel's three dinim. So in other words, Shmuel's three dinim, all of which mention 1/6, are all interdependent, because you're allowed to make the measurements larger, because you're allowed to make the coinage larger by up to 1/6, which you learn from the Pasuk in Yechezkel. Therefore, to keep pace with that, you can also make the measures larger by up to 1/6. And then in turn, all of that, what that accomplishes is also that even if a person continues to sell at the old price and at the old measure, because he doesn't know, maximum you're going to do is it's going to prevent him from making a profit, but at least he won't have lost any of his investments in the first place. Okay. The Gemara goes on. Now, so we said on Amud Aleph, we talked about the point that you have to have the measurements themselves, the various weights and measures have to be far apart enough in size that people are not going to get mixed up between them. We said with the exception of a third and a quarter of a hin, where we said those we have an exception for because they were in the Bais Hamikdash. Other than that, we want to make sure, and we said it also an exception is a toimen and an uchla because they're small and people can more easily tell what size they are. But other than that, you have to have a difference of more than 25% between adjacent measurements so people don't confuse them. So the Gemara tells Rav Papa Bar Shmuel takin kaila bar tlosa kapisi. Rav Papa Bar Shmuel created a measurement that holds three kapisi. The Rashbam explains that a kapiza is 3/4 of a kav. So now he's making a measure that contains three times that, which is going to be 9 logim. So there are 6 logim to a kav. There are 4 logim to a kav. So this is going to be 2 1/4 kavim. So they said, how could you do that? So they asked him, not the problem that's too close to another one, but didn't we say you can't make the measures more than another one by more than 1/6? Now here you have, in other words, they're saying, we're assuming that this is meant to replace the half a tarkav. The half a tarkav is a kav and a half, and here instead you're making something that's going to be 2 1/4 kavim. So it's too large a difference from the measurement that you're using to replace it. So in fact the Rashbam goes on and discusses that in fact the Gemara could have asked that it's also too easily confused with the measurements that are similar to it in size. Actually, the Rashbam brings 2 explanations. First of all, what is a kapiza? The Rashbam's first explanation is that a kapiza is 3/4 of a kav, and then the second explanation that a kapiza is a lug, and 3 kapizi would be 3 lugim. So again, then it would be 1/3 more than the 2 logim, the half a calf that we said before. Or according to the first explanation, it would be 2 1/4. It would be 2 1/4 calving. So according to either one, then the Gemara could have asked that it's too close to one of the old measures. So the Rashbam points out the Gemara preferred to ask from Shmuel's statement rather than the Braisa, because the Braisa didn't say explicitly what the threshold is between one size and the next, whereas Shmuel explicitly mentioned a number, 1/6, and therefore the question is that you're adding more than that to the measure. Omalahu, so Rav Papa answers, I'm not Kaila Chadzakini. The difference is, you say that what the Braisa is saying, and what Shmuel was saying is, you can't say, for example, that what used to be a calf is going to be larger and still call the calf, still keep the same name, but be more than 20% larger. Here, I'm making a whole new measure, which is not similar to any of the other ones. There's no problem that the merchants are going to lose out because they're not used to using this measure. Over time, they'll use it. As far as the concern about mixing it up with similar size containers, that Rashbam points out that in this particular place, they weren't using the ones that are close to it. They weren't using a half a tarkav or a tarkav. So there's no problem that they're going to mix up this one with them. So, apparently, the idea is, Rav Papa Bar Shmuel found that there's like a gap in the measuring system over here, and therefore he created a new measure that would help fill in that gap. So the Gemara says, Shadre the Pumbedisa. So Rav Papa sent a sample of this new size measuring container to Pumbedisa, Vole Kablua, but they didn't want to accept it. Because they said that even though they also weren't using a Taukov, a Chatzi Taukov, they didn't want to accept this newfangled measure. Shadri the Papunya, but then Rapapa Bashmul sent a copy of it to Papunya, the Kablua, and there they accepted it and incorporated it into their system of measurements. The Korale Ruz Papa, they called it Ruz Papa. What is Ruz? So Rashbam says that in their local language and in Persian or Aramaic or whatever, Ruz means a measurement. So they called it, in other words, Papa's measurement. then Rashbam brings a second possibility that the word is not ruz but roz, like we have roz of the Shabbos, which means the secret of papa, and it was like the idea that a papa came up with. But Rashbam says no, you never really find the word roz in Gemara Aramaic. That's more in a different dialect of Aramaic that you don't find over here. Agoris Abach brings from a Tosfos elsewhere that the word is maybe not supposed to be ruz papa, but rather dun papa, meaning the judgment of papa, and therefore that they called it that, like he judged that we need the size container. The Rimigash has yet another gear so that the word is supposed to be kuz papa, where kuz is a small container so they called it the small container of papa. Anyway, the point is, in other words, that in some places they were willing to accept this newfangled measure, but in other places, not. Next. Simon Otsri Paris Ain Otsrian Vain Metsian Vain Mistrakun Hamayim Mabetim Astrian Vlamatsian. These are all key words for the next few statements that the Gemara is going to bring from Brises and from Amaroyim about Dinim in terms of how much of what people are allowed to do as far as storing and hoarding produce and as far as making profits. Now you have like this, back then, where harvests were much more variable depending on the weather, and it wasn't that easy to import food from one place to another, so you could have a person could store up food in such a way that then he's going to store when it's plentiful, and then hold on to it, and jack up the prices when there's a drought or whatever. So that kind of thing is called oitzrei peiros, where they're storing away peiros in order to make a profit for later. So the first braisa says, turn it up on, oitzrei peiros, people who do that, who store away peiros in times of plenty, where they're then going to, so they buy large amounts when it's cheap, and then later on, when supplies are low, then they're going to sell them at a higher, at an inflated price, so the poor people are losing out, right? So such people, umalve ribis, and people who lend at ribis, which is of course also from the Torah, umaktine efa, people who make the efa smaller, so they use dishonest weights, like we've been talking about in this whole sugya, where for example they have a measure that's supposed to hold an efa and it actually holds less, and they cheat people with it, umafkiyeh sha'arim, and people who cause prices to go up because they sell at higher prices, and therefore that causes, now in a normal case, as we learned previously on Peites Amud Aleph, they would raise their prices. Fine, sooner or later they're going to have to lower them because they're going to lose all their customers. But let's say they have a monopoly. Let's say they have enough of a monopoly or close to it where they're able to raise the prices, and people just have to go along with it. So I'll lay in a cost of Omer, all kinds of such people. The Pasuk criticizes them and says that the Navi says about them, Lamer, they're saying to themselves, Masa Yavar HaChodesh, when is the month going to pass? V'nashbira Shever, and we're going to sell grain at higher prices. Chodesh, Rashbam explains, means literally a month. So in other words, they're saying we're going to wait until a month has passed after the harvest season. If they're selling within a month, then fine. That's not Oitzrei Peiros because it's still basically the tail end of the harvest season. But they wait a full month afterwards, and only then do they start selling. And meanwhile, the prices have gotten raised. So such people, they continue about Shabbos, or when is Shabbos going to come? And in the Rashbam explains, Shmita year, v'niftechabar, and we're going to then open up and start selling our produce. So this is also Otsrei Peiros. This is, in other words, people are saying, we're going to wait until Shemitah, and then we have hordes of food that we stored up from before Shemitah, and now when there's a shortage during Shemitah, then we're going to go and start selling it and be able to charge whatever we want. And they continue, the Novi continues, the different Mephoshim on the Pasuk have different other meanings of Achodesh and Vashabbos. It can mean Rosh Chodesh, where they generally didn't do Malacha, and Shabbos would be the actual Shabbos. Whatever they're saying, though, is we can't wait until we have the opportunity to start doing our sharp and dishonest business practices and take advantage of the poor people. Lahakdin Eifa, that then we're going to have a chance to make our Eifa smaller and cheat customers. Or Lahagdil Shekel, and to make the Shekel larger and charge charge people more, or to make crooked the deceitful scales. So in other words, we're going to make scales that weigh dishonestly, that are not going to be made to the specifications that we learned previously. And Lahagdil Shekel actually also means not just that they're going to charge more, it means that Ashbam says, it means that's the Malva Beribis. He's making his own shkolim bigger by lending at Ribis. So Uchtiv, and the next pasuk continues, Nishba Hashem Begoin Yaakov, Hashem swears by the pride of Yaakov, meaning the Bais Mikdash, or meaning the pride of the Jewish people in general, Im Eshkach L'Netzach Kol Ma'aseihem, that I will never forget all the things that we're doing. So Hashem is swearing in the name of the Bais Mikdash, or his own name, or whatever, that such people, Hashem is not going to forgive them, Hashem is not going to forget what they did, and he's going to punish them. So in other words, we see that all these kinds of people, in short, are people that Hashem is unhappy with and is going to punish. So the Gemara says, Oitzrei Peiris Kegen Man, when we say people who store Peiris, what do we mean as an example? Amar Rabbi Yochanan can Shabsi Otsa Peiris. For example, there was a notorious guy in those times named Shabsi who used to do that. He would buy up produce when it was cheap and store up large amounts of it. And that way, later on, when prices are high, when there's less of a supply, he would be the only supplier who still has, and he would sell it at inflated prices and then take advantage of the poor people. Meaning, in other words, that Ashbam says, as opposed to if he stores them up when it's cheap, and then he sells them at that same cheap price later on, even though prices are higher, that's much less of an issue. But here the problem is that the Shabsi is trying to make an extra buck for himself on the backs of the poor people, because he's saying, now there's no supply, I'm the only one who has a supply, therefore I can charge whatever I want. And that's, the Gemara actually mentions an interesting thing in Yuma, that it happened once, the Gemara says over there, that if a pregnant woman has cravings on Yom Kippur, then you have to first whisper, and she has to eat, because otherwise it's dangerous for her and the baby. The first thing you do is you whisper in her ear that it's Yom Kippur, and see if that calms down her cravings, and if not, then you give her food. So the Gemara tells there was one woman who they whispered in her ear that it's Yom Kippur, and the cravings calmed down, and her baby ended up being Rabbi Yochanan. Rebbe said about him, I can see that he has the capability to be a great tzaddik, that even in the womb he's able to control his cravings, and not cause his mother to be over and to have to break her fast. On the other hand, and the Gemara says there was another person where another woman who was in that situation, and she whispering that it was Yom Kippur didn't help. And the Gemara says her baby ended up being this notorious Shabse Otsa Peri. So we see that this guy was a Rosha where he figured he's gonna make extra money on the backs of the poor people. There's a cute vort on it from the Vilna Gaon that says at the end of Parashas Shemini, right before Yavisha Kisazria, right before that, the pasuk finishes off, Lahavdil Veina Tomei Veina Tahor, to distinguish between the Tomei and the Tahor, or Veina Chaya Nechelos, and between the Chaya, the wild animal that can be eaten, or Veina Chaya Shelo Se'ochol, and between the wild animal that cannot be eaten. So there's a cute vort from the Vilna Gaon that says the word Chaya also means, we find in various places, it means a pregnant woman, a woman who's about to give birth, and so it's hinting at how do you tell between the Tomei and the Tahor. Her, you see whether the Chaya is forced to eat, Hanecheles, like Shabzi, also Peiris' mother, versus Asherlo Se'ochel, where she doesn't have to eat because her baby controls his cravings even in the womb and doesn't force his mother to violate Yom Kippur. Anyway, the point is that Shabse Otsa Peiris is an example of this kind of Otsa Peiris that we're saying is also, we was doing it dafke in order to charge higher prices to the poor people at other times, when he's holding on to the grain in order that later on, when there's a short supply, that he's going to sell at cheaper prices, then there's no problem with that. So the Gemara tells in that connection, Avur de Shmuel, Mezabin Lahula Peiri Betara Charfa, Shmuel's father would sell his grain and other produce or whatever at the early price, meaning in other words early in the season at the harvest time, the tarachayfa, and he would charge the current price that's going at that time. The point being, in other words, that he figured if he's selling it, then everybody else is going to sell it. That is going to sell it at that time as well, because everybody else is they're not going to want that. He's going to have a monopoly on it, so therefore they're going to all start selling the contents of their granaries as well. So he would do that. Shmuel Bray, his son Shmuel, Mashi LePeri, he would do differently. He would hold on to the Peris until price them more expensive, Omizavan Lo Vatara Afla, and then he would sell them for the original, he would sell them at the later time, much later in the season, when there's not much grain available, Vatara Haifa at the lower price that it was earlier in the season. So in other words, he didn't actually buy it at the time of the harvest and store it away, because that would cause a rise in prices. So if he did, it wouldn't be like Shabbos to Otzer Peret. But nevertheless, the point is, it would defeat the purpose. He's trying to make it easier for the poor people. So the point is, in other words, it's not that he would buy it in advance and then sell it when there's shortages. Rather, what it means is, in other words, that he would wait to sell his own grain until supplies are low, until sometime after the harvest. But then he would sell it at the price that it had previously fetched during the harvest when prices were low. They sent from Eretz Yisrael a message, Tova de Abba Midibra. The fact is, in the end, what Avur de Shmuel did is better than what the son is doing. You could argue both of them are trying to make it easier for the poor people, but my timer, Tara de Ravach Ravach. When prices are low, they tend to stay low. So Avur de Shmuel's method made it that to begin with, prices stay low at the time of the harvest, and then they tend to continue at the same low price for a long time afterwards, because people don't just easily change their prices just on a whim. As opposed to Shmuel's method is that you already have that prices are high because there's not very much grain available because everybody else has already sold theirs, and then all of a sudden he's going to open up and start selling at a cheaper price. Fine, but it's very hard to bring down prices once people have gotten used to paying the higher prices. So in that sense, therefore, I've heard the Shmuel's method was actually better for the poor people. So fine, we'll continue tomorrow. That's the chance.